I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Tom Rockman joins me now, the former journalist, is the author of the critical and best-selling hit novel, The Imperfectionist. It was a New York Times bestseller and on the long list for the Giller Prize. It's an astonishing novel about the men and women at an international English-language newspaper based in Rome. Each chapter is the story of a particular character, like the first is on the Paris correspondent Lloyd Burko, while others include the editor-in-chief Kathleen, the corrections editor Herman Cohen, reader of the paper, Ornelia de Monterecchi, the publisher of the paper, Oliver Ott, among many others. Throughout these stories, we get a sense of what's happening at the paper and an interesting look at the times. We also have, between the chapters, these stories about the background of the paper, its founders, its founding, and more. I couldn't put this book down, and I didn't want it to end. It's a remarkable book whose rights have already been purchased by Hollywood. Brad Pitt's production company has optioned the film rights for the book. Tom Rockman was born in London, where he lives, but he grew up here in Vancouver and studied film in Toronto and journalism at Columbia. He was a foreign correspondent for the Associated Press and was an editor based in Paris for the International Herald Tribune. TomRockman.com is his website. The soft cover is out now from Anchor Books in Vancouver today. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Tom Rockman. Good morning, Mr. Rockman.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. As I said in the intro, I'm a big fan of the book. I don't usually read the novels, the authors that come on the program, because I have the terrible habit of giving away the ending, so I'm going to try to have to refrain from doing that. It seems, from talking to reporters, journalists that I know, they really like the book because it strikes a chord with them. It's the book that they say they wish they wrote. When you started the project, when you started writing this book, did you know you had something that was I don't say good, but something that you knew that would capture this business the way it did?
Well, I certainly hoped that it would. I think that my starting point for this novel was really the characters and the stories rather than the news setting itself. But what I wanted to do was write a novel in stories and somehow link together and sew together all of those disparate tales of these people, these expats living in Rome. And so the newspaper and the news world ended up being a terrific backdrop to somehow unify all of these separate stories. And once I settled on that backdrop, it became immediately clear to me, immediately obvious, that I had a really great story to tell as well, because I'd worked in the international media for, on and off for, let's say, about a decade at that point, from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s approximately. And during that period, I had seen such extraordinary change. I'd seen the traditional culture of this media really begin to crumble and then to fall apart at an astonishing pace, and publications were being closed down and others were changing their natures in ways that prevented them from ever returning to what they had been. And I recognized there was an element of our culture that was dissolving before us. And since I had an interesting perspective on that, I thought this would be a great extra layer to add to these stories, and I hoped, of course, to be able to capture it and to be able to capture the feeling of it. And when I hear responses like that one that you just gave me, it's hugely gratifying, because reporters and journalists are a picky bunch, and they would certainly not silence themselves if they found that I hadn't caught something that resonated with them. So I'm delighted to know that it did work in that respect.
Do you look back at your time as a journalist affectionately?
I look back at certain features of it with great affection. It allowed me to live in many different countries and to see and witness extraordinary things. And perhaps one of the most appealing aspects of it was that I was able to access these other countries in a way that I couldn't possibly have if I'd just been a visitor or a tourist, because you go there not just seeing the sights, but, you know, seeing the inside of government, for example, or trying to understand how the criminal justice system works there. And you're usually led about by some local reporter or fixer who will be your translator, both in terms of the language and in terms of the culture, and you get this extraordinary view into another world that isn't typically available to an outsider. And so that element of it, and also the element of writing and working with words, are features that I enjoyed tremendously. And there were other aspects, of course, that I loved less. I don't think I was really made to be a reporter. I could do it, but I struggled sometimes to be as aggressive and pushy as would be needed to be a great reporter. I don't think I was temperamentally built to be badgering and bothering people for quotes and shouting questions across crowded rooms. I always felt like shrinking into the corner and hoped that somebody else would ask the question I wanted to hear the response to. So I think that I liked certain parts, and other parts I liked less. But overall, looking back, it certainly was quite a ride.
Have any of your former colleagues seen themselves in this book? Have they said, like, you know, that's me?
To my great relief, no, they haven't. I was terrified of that when the book was about to be published. I was very concerned that people would naturally assume that, you know, that if they had worked in such and such a position and I had written a character who had that position, that they might think it was some sort of cruel commentary on them or a comical look at them. And I certainly didn't want to hurt anybody. And in fact, those characters were not based on real people. So I was concerned about that. And I remember that I had there was a little in-house interview that was done of me at the International Herald Tribune for their newsletter just when I was about to leave when the book had sold, and I spent most of this interview just trying to emphasize that no, it's not based on any of you, and that these are all created, invented characters, and I was nonetheless worried, and I was however greatly relieved when they did begin to read the book, and I got a series of notes saying this clearly isn't us, and these are characters that we really know these characters from the newsroom, but they're not us in particular. So that was a relief.
Is there a character that's most like you in this book?
I don't think there's a single one that's most like me, but the characters are so different from me in various obvious ways. But on the other hand, there are certain features of them that are probably mine, and I think that's just an aspect of writing itself, of inventing a character and understanding a character that when you try to build them and when you try to reckon with all of their thoughts and attitudes, then you often will pluck from yourself a particular characteristic that might not even be fully realized in you. So perhaps, let's say, an irritability or a sort of humor that you never really use or you've decided isn't your personality, but then nonetheless you can recognize as a feature of you that could have somehow blossomed. And you take that trait and you drop it into circumstances that are not your own. Let's say, in my case, an older woman who's of a different nationality and had all sorts of experiences quite starkly different from mine. But nonetheless, there will be human elements that I can completely sympathize with and understand, and it's, I think, based on that you can build believable characters. So at the same time, none of them is me, but all of them feel a little bit like me.
As the builder, as the inventor of the character, do you have to like them? I mean, I'm thinking back about all the characters in the book. There's no one in the book that I really liked in terms of that I thought to myself, yeah, okay, if I saw them on the weekend, I'd like to hang out with them.
I think that something different than and more complex than liking or disliking happens in the process of it. Actually, I think because I've often thought that some of these people, if I were to meet them in a newsroom or out of it, I would probably not want much to do with them either. But in terms of the writing of the book, I felt huge sympathy and even affection for all of them, and I think that was necessary to write these characters fairly and fully and not cruelly, because when you're writing a character, you have such authority and power over them that you can cast them in any light that you want. You can reveal them in ways that are quite cold and hard, and that can be true of anybody looked at in detail. I didn't want to write that sort of book. I didn't want to expose my characters in that way. I had real affection for them viewed in this from close up in that sense. And so I think that it was a function of the writing that it sort of augmented my empathy and sympathy for them, in the same way that I think actually reading has that effect, that it it allows you to be more sympathetic and empathetic to other people than you might be if you were to encounter them and they were pushing in the opposite direction in the course of your life.
Now, there were two characters in particular that I didn't like, but I think they're the best drawn-out characters. I didn't like Ruby and I didn't like Abby. And because they seem to be women that I've met, that I recognize, you know? You told McLean's that you were annoyed by discussions of men writing about women and women writing men, that whether the author's gender has anything to do with the character that they're writing about. Now, do you think we're past the point where the gender of an author doesn't matter? I mean, these are two women in particular, as I said, who I think are the best characters in the book in terms of that you really got them.
Well, I don't know if it matters or not. I think that the point that I made in that interview and that I would make again is just that I find it terribly reductive and almost a small-minded attitude for people to claim that authors can only write about themselves or their own gender or their own type of person. In the end, you know, the whole project of fiction, it seems to me, is trying to understand and explore other human beings. It's not a form of public diary. It's a much more ambitious and wonderful project than that. And so I think that the counter argument could be that one has all sorts of biases and one might be completely unaware of them, but nonetheless they're going to come into the writing. And there's a possibility of that. But I think that good writing is that which strives to neutralize it and not to be writing it from your perspective, but from the perspective of a sort of as much as possible objective observer. And when it comes to say, female characters or characters from different countries or different ages from me, those are the ones that I'm most fascinated in because of the fact that their experiences are different than mine. And I speak both as a reader and as a writer. Those are the ones that I want to explore. I'm not interested in reading or writing just about me. I mean, I know me quite well, and I'm much more curious about other human beings. And so I would love it if the discourse was shifted slightly so that we didn't view it all as if this everybody had by definition an incredibly narrow view of life and couldn't possibly see each other. Were that true, then I would wonder what fiction was for.
So in reading the book, before I started the book, I should say, I knew that it was going to be optioned for a film. So naturally, when you start the book, you think about who will play each character. But by the time I finished the book, I wasn't thinking about that anymore, except one character, and that was Gerda Erzberger, which is a sort of minor character in one of the stories. One of the journalists interviews her, and I was just thinking about who would play her. Have you given thought to that? What does she look like?
It's an interesting question. I suppose that I have been asked about who I would want to cast in the various roles in the film, and I struggle really to come up with names because in my mind I have these characters and I don't have actors superimposed over them. So, and I probably would prefer not to in my mind. Though, you know, of course I'll be excited when they do cast it, and it'll be very interesting to see who takes on those roles. But for the time being, I continue to sort of cling to the images that I had in the first place.
And will you be involved in the adaptation of the book?
Well, at the moment, I'm in touch with the head of the production company that has acquired the option to make the film, and also I've met recently with the screenwriter and in New York when I was there, and I have very good relations with all of them, and we have discussions about what they're doing, and they do seem to be interested in my opinion and hear me out, but you know they're not in any way obliged to do what I say. They have the rights, and I have great confidence in their ability to produce something really terrific. That's a sort of a work of its own. It's not going to be, of course, exactly like the book because you can't make a film. You can't change it into a different medium and keep it the same. But I have hopes that it'll be a really terrific work in its own right. And I'll help on the sidelines, let's say, if I can.
And do you find it easy for yourself as the creator of all of this, the creator of the characters? I mean, you know them quite well, to let go of them.
I think so. I think you, under the circumstances, you don't have an alternative. That if you were to cling to them, you would be terribly disappointed because you couldn't. First of all, I'm not in a position to control exactly how they're put on the screen. I'm not going to write the script. I'm not going to direct the film or finance it. So I would immediately surrender some control over it. And also, as I said before, I recognize, having studied film actually in my university degree, I recognize how significantly different the film versions by necessity are from the written versions. And so I completely accept that. And of course, now I probably wouldn't want to be the one making some of those hard decisions about which bits to cut or which characters to shift here and there. That would be painful, but I'm not going to be taking that role, so I leave that to someone else.
Yeah, you studied film. What are some of the best movies about journalism, in your opinion?
I think probably some of my favorites would be All the President's Men and another one called The Paper. All the President's Men, which everybody knows, is a 1970s film that talks about the breaking of the Watergate scandal with Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward at the Washington Post. And it's just a thrillingly made movie and a wonderful account of investigative journalism at its best. It's also, I think, kind of fascinating as a timepiece, as a sort of time capsule of the peak, if you will, of journalism at that stage. And these days, it's an altogether different situation. I was actually at the Washington Post just a week ago or something. I went by the offices to see a friend there, and it was interesting to see that and then sort of sync that up to date with my recollections of those scenes in that picture. And of course, the business has changed so dramatically. Another that I mentioned there, The Paper, at some points it's a little bit sort of slapstick and silly and is not a perfect film, but it does capture very, very well the spirit of a newsroom, and I think in some ways is almost captures it a bit better than All the President's Men, because All the President's Men is the ideal of the newsroom, whereas The Paper is slightly more the reality of it. So it's a little more gritty, a little more pushy, and a little more black humor. And that certainly was my experience of what it was like in those places.
State of Play is another one that I would add to those two.
Which one, I'm sorry?
State of Play.
Oh yeah. I've seen the BBC version of it. I haven't seen the remake, but that's a great one, a really entertaining one too. Yeah.
Yeah. I was reading the acknowledgments, and you mentioned a person named Dominic Phillips.
Yes.
Who is he?
That is my mother's brother, who died very, very young of an illness, and was somebody whose story I heard about a great deal when I grew up, and was always touched by, and I knew how significant he was to my mother. And so when I had an opportunity in the acknowledgments to record all of the people to whom I felt some gratitude and thanks, and I wanted to take the chance as well to record this boy whom I had never met, but whose story I knew so well.
And his birthday is February 10th. Does that have any significance to the story? I can't remember now.
No, it has no. It has no pertinence to the story. It's just, I think that, that my mother, being one of the last people on Earth who remembers her brother, just had would always also recall his birthday. And as time goes by, I think you become worried that your memories are going to fade and vanish, and the people that you knew in those memories sort of will vanish in a more definitive way. And so it was my attempt to sort of keep him alive a little bit.
What papers do you read?
I read I read a great deal online, like everybody nowadays. And so the online things that I read would be the New York Times, and I read a lot of sort of things like the Associated Press as well, which you can find on Yahoo News, etc. I read some Italian papers like Corriere della Sera, And I read pretty broadly. I read a lot of magazines online also. But frankly, I still love newspapers, and I still get a special pleasure from opening paper across the table, especially on the weekends. And you get those great big fat weekend editions, and you can over the course of your day be exposed to all sorts of different and unexpected things. And I'm a bit of I wouldn't say that I'm by any means a Luddite, because I certainly read online too, but I have a certain degree of fondness for the old school as well.
Yeah, do you like being back in Vancouver?
I love it. I love being back here. It's just one of the most glorious cities there is, and I'm wonderfully happy to be here, not least because I can also see my parents and have some delicious home-cooked meals.
Did this place have an effect on you growing up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I think that any place where you grew up, it has a profound effect on you. Of course, it's difficult to disentangle exactly which bits of you came from where, but, you know, I went to elementary school here. I went to high school here. I think as well, you know, that it was very significant in my life that I shifted from London, England, when I was 7 and came to Vancouver. And so I think that that contributed to a certain degree to feeling a little bit detached and not entirely certain when I was younger where I should be and what place felt like home. And my accent was always a bit confused, and I think continues to be a little bit strange sounding. It's not one thing or the other. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Where did you go to high school?
I went to Point Grey Mini.
Do you identify with London, or is this home?
I don't. You know, I feel like I prefer the idea of having many homes, and that rather than having just one. I mean, when I go back to my parents' house here in Vancouver, it really has such a home feel to me. And you know, the question is it the place? Is it the location? Is it, or is it because that's where the people who are dear to me live? I don't know exactly, you know. And then when I return to my apartment in London, then that will feel home in a different way too. So, in each of those places, I imagine that there'll be certain respects where I won't feel entirely at home. I mean, when I'm in London, I don't sound like a Londoner, and I don't know a great deal about let's say the educational system or even features of the current political scene. So it's not, it doesn't feel completely like my city, let's say. But I like to travel and to adopt what I like from each place rather than be bound to a single one. That said, Vancouver does hold a special place for me.
Now, the reviews for this book were outstanding. Christopher Buckley's review said that he worried now that the bar was set high. Now, you're working on the second novel now, are you?
That's right, yes.
Yeah. Did you think about how the second novel will be reacted to while you're writing it at all?
I think it's best to try not to entertain those thoughts too much, because it's impossible to say, especially while the book is in the process of being written. You just can't really know. And you know, I think it is important and valuable to have the idea of readers or of a reader in your mind. That is to say, that you're not just writing whatever you fancy, but you're writing a combination of what you fancy plus what you think will attract an interest and intrigue the best reader you can imagine, the really intelligent, great readers who are out there. And so I think that's a very helpful, healthy thing. But I think that if you sit there thinking, what is this reviewer going to think, or what is the, you know, what are the sales going to be, then you're bound for all sorts of disappointment, for writer's block. It would be a terrible state to be in. I instead prefer to just do my absolute best with this new book and hope that readers enjoy it ultimately.
Tom, I really love this book and I've enjoyed the conversation today. I'd say good luck, but you don't need good luck with it because it's already a smash, but best wishes nonetheless.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
The book is called The Imperfectionist. It's from Anchor Canada. It's author Tom Rockman on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.